Hello, my name is Thomas, and thank you very, very much for downloading this episode of British Culture, Albion Never Dies. It's a question and answer all about Britain. I've had a pretty quiet week, as frankly I've been under the weather. Friend had a cold, I caught it, was in bed for a couple of days, but I had a lot of joy in the last week, mainly thanks to my Instagram account and friends messaging me. And one gentleman, whose Instagram name is CommanderBond_007, who sent me a portrait. Thank you very much, Matthew. So he did a series of portraits of people in the Bond community that he just likes and had them printed onto a cup. And I was included with one of them, so I shared that on my Instagram. Take a look at it. I think it's really, really cool. I've also had lots of other kind of messages back and forth across the internet, whilst I've also, in the weekday, been trying to find a place of my own to live. If you've been listening to previous episodes, you'll know that I came back to the UK kind of hoping to find a job, and I found one. I was really pleased. A friend of mine put me up in a spare room, and I'm still there. I'm still hunting for a place. A couple of friends have offered me places to stay and some dog-sitting opportunities, which I'm looking forward to, but I'm rushing around. One place looked really, really promising, so I booked to have a look round, and when I looked round, it was in a terrible, terrible state. Things like, you know, the door frames were basically planks of wood just roughly nailed to the wall, and you were expected to, as the tenant, you were expected to pay rent and renovate the place. So you'd be paying to renovate somebody else's property. So I wasn't too keen about that idea. I came across a second place which looked great. And I had this issue before. I just kind of checked with the estate agent what are the details. And they're like, yeah, it's just for 6 months, completely unfurnished. And that's because the seller, the landlord, really wants to sell it rather than rent it. So he wants you to be there for 6 months, and people should be coming around looking at it. So what, I'm expected to move into a place just for 6 months, buy out all the furniture, and have people looking around at literally any time? That seemed crazy. I mean, fetch it yourself and sell it yourself. Either you're selling or you're renting. And another place I had a look at just went up onto the internet, I think, on Saturday. So I quickly rang up and booked a house viewing as soon as possible. So they did that, booked it for me, and I just got a text message saying, nope, cancelled. My viewing is cancelled. So there we go. It's summer madness trying to find a place. Just keep looking. As I say, quite a few friends have been very kind and generous to kind of letting me stay in a place here or there. That's very, very good of them. So as I say, some craziness in my life, but on the internet, it's been lovely. I asked on my Instagram, just ask me any question about British culture. So I'll get straight into it with JEgan_47. That's his Instagram name. He asked me, who do you think should be the next James Bond? And I've been asked that quite a few times. Calvin Dyson on YouTube just did an exhaustive list on his YouTube channel. So you can check out that exhaustive and I think really, really good review of all the up-and-coming actors. And he does touch on the familiar favourites. So before I get deep into that, because I did kind of pass the question back to my Instagram friends and ask them, well, who do you think? But I'll give you my answer straight up, which is that for me, it really does depend on the kind of movie. I personally would love to see Christopher Nolan's take on the 007 franchise. I've enjoyed all of his films that I've seen, and there's a few I haven't seen, but all of them are great. He always seems to come along with the same cast pretty well. So I can imagine Cillian Murphy or Robert Pattinson in the lead, because they both worked with him before. I know Cillian Murphy is kind of towards the upper end of the age range of people being cast as Bond. I think do well. But Robert Pattinson is, of course, now Batman, so maybe not him. But they're both kind of good, solid actors, and it, I think, shows you the kind of lead that Nolan likes to work with. And I think it would be inevitable that you'd have Kenneth Branagh as M. Michael Caine would have to be in the film somewhere, so I guess Q. I'd like to see Naomi Harris stay as Moneypenny, but I do like the way that Nolan creates this cast and kind of takes them through all his different films, because they're a solid, reliable bunch. And he has been very, very Bond influenced, so maybe he'd be interested. Maybe he's too big name as a director to do Bond, but maybe that's what Bond needs right now to help set the new direction. As I say, I did ask my friends on Instagram. So who do you think? And Henry Cavill did come up quite a few times. To be honest, I see him as Superman in my mind. I think he's already got his thing. I'd love to see a new person doing their new thing. One person suggested Nomi being 007 still, but not James Bond, just having the number like she did in the film, which always makes me think of the Jinx spin-off that was always talked about, and Hailey Berry just never quite found the time to get round to it. Bond26 Wishlist on Instagram said, whoever auditions well. It's impossible to tell who's got, quote, the stuff until they're in the room. And I kind of rarely agree with that. Again, it would be lovely to see a new face. I know some previous Bond actors, like Roger Moore, is well-known on TV, and Pierce Brosnan is well-known in the US on TV. I didn't recognise Daniel Craig. I realise I had seen him in films before once I looked back at it, but I don't remember every actor I see. And as I said, to me, he was a complete unknown. And thank you very much to Two Green Thumbs, who suggested Kermit the Frog. Great suggestion, and that would definitely be a different type of Bond film. Pierce Brosnan and Roger Moore, of course, have been on The Muppet Show, so why not? Why not? We have a little clip here.
Some of the equipment you'll be needing to host the show this evening, Mr. Bond.
Ooh. Thank you, Bunsen, but I'm not really James Bond. I'm just Pierce Brosnan.
Whatever you say, 007. Wink, wink. Now, this interesting little gizmo looks like an ordinary microphone.
A microphone, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And what does it do?
Well, it amplifies your voice electronically so the audience can hear you.
I see. And I suppose this is the on button.
No, that's the button that makes Beaker's pants explode. Beaker, go change your pants. Come along.
Yes.
Over here.
Fantastic. So we could have a return to that for the next Bond film. As I said, it all depends on the kind of film they want to make. So picking one that kind of just was flittering through my mind, I asked people what they thought of 1983's Octopussy, and most people actually had a really positive view of it. It's got kind of the spy drama rather than out-and-out action. I mean, it's got the action, but also has a bit of mystery, and it is a bit jet-setting, but you get to see the locations a bit better than many others. I kind of come around to this film more and more, and it seemed most people were very, very positive. About 9 out of 10 was the general view. I mean, there were one or two people who rated it really, really low. But mostly people rated it really high. I have a second question from Jay Egan. Sticking on the Bond theme, he said, question for you. Do you think the Bond franchise will ever dabble into the pop or street British culture such as Kingsman has done, or do you think it will remain representing a more traditional sentiment of British culture? I quite like the idea of Bond being very, very traditionally British and then heading out into the world and uncovering more and more about other cultures. So I really like From Russia With Love, where he goes to Turkey and he spends most of the film there and he gets his local ally and he learns a lot about it. Equally, you know, Octopussy has a lot in, you know, India and Berlin, and you get to see more and more of it. So I really like that when you get to see something of a place from a British point of view. I think the Englishman Abroad thing works really well. Maybe I would, having been an Englishman Abroad quite a lot. I responded at the time that if it's, you know, the street culture twinned with Bond, I think A View to a Kill did work really well, having an older Bond and younger contemporaries. I really like that, but I know it's not universally acclaimed. And finally, JEgan_47 asked me the classic question, why do British people have bad teeth? I've been expecting this question for, I don't know, a year or two that I've been sharing all about British culture on this podcast, on my YouTube channel, www.youtube.com/British culture, and my Instagram. So I've been sharing a lot about British culture, and I know this is a stereotype in the United States about British people. As I replied to him at the time, it's a common stereotype in the USA, but I haven't found it in any other country. So I've never heard of this when I was in Turkey. I've never heard of this from Chinese people. I've never heard of this from Saudis. Around, you know, the European, you know, continent, French, Italians, no, I've never come across this. It does seem to be a specifically American thing. So I've heard a few different ideas about it, that maybe it's when American soldiers in the Second World War came to the UK, and the UK, you know, was in a different state at the time, had other things to think about than dental care. It could be the Hollywood stars, you know, when at a time when they were all having kind of bright, white, shiny teeth that were very, very similar. And British people just didn't like it, you know, as long as the teeth were healthy. So I guess in the 60s, the British invasion and all that, there's a very different vibe. I see quite a few different explanations, but I was interested. Purdy302 on Instagram, who's American, commented that he had no idea about that stereotype until Austin Powers. Two Green Thumbs suggested The Simpsons. Someone else suggested that. That it may have just been a joke there that, for whatever reason, kind of picked up and up and up. Roland Hume, the British novelist who I interviewed quite a while ago now, should have him back on the podcast, said that perfect teeth, in kind of inverted commas, is a huge industry in the USA. Again, it's whether it's cosmetic or whether it's health. Charloy did actually go to the health and suggested it's sugar consumption per capita. So in the UK, it used to be very, very high compared to the rest of the European Union. I think it was the highest sugar consumption in the EU. Now that's no longer the case. Our sugar consumption has gone down. It's briefly Googling statistics, but it is quite far below the sugar consumption in the United States. I think I mentioned in a previous episode about how in America, even bread has sugar. So I wasn't sure about that, but again, I'm not sure where it comes from. I do not have a good, satisfying answer, except that it does seem to be a very specifically American stereotype. So I'm curious, if you are listening and you are shouting at your radio, your laptop, your phone, if you have an answer, just email me at albionneverdies@gmail.com or Instagram or anywhere else that you can contact me. If you're wandering around Bradford and you see me, just say hello. This is the answer. Love to hear more. On some very different topics, Adam Cathal asks, what's the difference between crumpets and English muffins? Again, that's a very American one, because I'd never come across English muffins anywhere until I went to the diner Denny's in the USA. And it's kind of more like a bun, which is very fluffy, and I really like it, but I've never come across it before. And I looked this up because it says English on it, so I'm really curious. And it's not after England the country, it's after Thomas English, the American baker, who created these and sold them, and so they're known as English muffins. Whereas a crumpet, again, it's kind of has that fluffiness. It's got lots and lots of holes on one side, it's fairly flat. On the other side, it's a bit more solid. I wouldn't say too solid, but it's closed at the bottom, so that when you have it hot and you put butter and jam on it, it kind of soaks it up like a sponge on the top, but it doesn't fall all the way through. Nice kind of spongy stack. I really like it. Adam John Fraser sent me a question saying, red trousers? It was one of the first things people told me not to wear when I arrived here 10 years ago, I think from Canada. I don't have any red trousers. I don't think I've ever owned a pair of red trousers. I don't know. The vibe doesn't seem to fit me. But I just thought I'd ask people on Instagram. I just had a simple poll. Red trousers, yes or no? 71% no. 29% yes. So we have our two-thirds majority for no. It seems that most British people, and it's a lot of British people on my Instagram, and lots of kind of Anglophiles, it seems to be the general vibe is just no. I don't have a good answer why. Izzy Reddy, a good Instagram name, asked me the story of why people mostly don't think British food is that good, and curry isn't British, but why is it so popular over there? Again, this is something I happily have a look at. I often look at Quora. I follow their hashtag, you know, British Britain, just in case there's any interesting ideas. Sometimes it's something I can learn from it. You do get waves of trolls coming onto that website, often talking about food. It seems to be a common way to bash Britain and say the food's really bad. And I'd say a lot of British people have kind of a self-deprecating sense of humour, and they say, oh, food is so bad. I talked about this, I think, on a deep dive with Kane. Maybe it was Britain, Not Just London. Maybe it was that one, where we talked about food. And it's kind of funny that what is British food? Most people I know who've tried fish and chips like it. You know, the English breakfast, most people I know like that. So when I actually ask people, so what British food have you had? People often like it while still believing British food is so bad. So does it come from our sense of humour? Does it come from, again, you can find lots of online explanations, say, it's American soldiers in Second World War, times were very different. But I've also come across kind of accounts of soldiers coming over and finding that in the Second World War, so much of the food was like homegrown, you know, you had the people, you know, making the most out of the land, that I found quite a few accounts saying that they came to Britain and really loved the food. So, again, there's explanations on the internet. I wonder if it just comes down to our sense of humour and the type of things that we kind of joke about ourselves. So if I met an American and as an expat in China and Saudi, they'd always say, oh, my hometown is the best place ever. And people say, is this really as beautiful as it could be? And I say, even better. Whereas if you ask a British person, oh, where are you from? It's a dump. Oh, surely it's not so bad. No, it's really a dump. I mean, there's literally a book called Crap Towns published in the UK, and people wrote letters of complaint demanding that their town should be included in the next editions. They had to produce a Crap Towns 2 based on all the letter writers saying, this is outrageous. My town is terrible. You must include my town in your book. I don't know. It's a really different, I guess, sense of humour. As for curry, well, that's our link with India, you know. Britain did rule India for, what, 400 or 500 years, and we have that long connection. I was talking to somebody recently about this, about general knowledge about the Indian subcontinent. You know, if you read Kipling now, there's quite a lot you have to Google. You know, Rudyard Kipling was born and brought up in India, and although he was educated in the UK, he returned to India, spoke two local languages. He's a really interesting person, and then you read his books, and again, obviously, a lot of what he writes was common knowledge at the time, and I feel a lot of that has just dropped out of our culture now, because of course an ordinary Brit, you know, if they might join the army, it was much more common then. The British Army was much bigger and our population was much smaller. People would go out to India for 7 years and experience the culture, not just as a backpacking holiday or something, they'd live it. So I feel that the embedded knowledge, the culture, was much better known then. Queen Victoria's Jubilee, there were banners going across in London written in English and in Hindi. Largest Hindi library in the world outside India is in London, and it dates from this time. So I think our knowledge of India has kind of gradually diminished, which is interesting because we live in a more and more interconnected world technologically. But I would say that our general knowledge of the culture may well have decreased over the last 100 years. But that's where it comes from. And there's nothing like a British Army curry, unless you've got the recipe. Hassan Nawaz asked, milk in your tea? Which again, I see, you know, if you drink Indian tea, it can be very, very milky. And finally, one last question from Two Green Thumbs. He's my friend. Two Green Thumbs, I asked, do you have any questions about British culture? And he said, no. I think that's a perfect place to leave it. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of British Culture Albion Never Dies, and thank you to everybody who sent me a question and everyone who answered the questions. I really, really like these interactive episodes. See you later. Take care.